You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Cheeseman Podcast. This is Brendan, your host for the show. It's been a while. Happy Easter, everyone. Thanks for your patience while we've been having a little break during the international break, and hope you're enjoying Easter with the family. We did have a game. Football's back finally. So we had the game against Luton yesterday, which we won 2-1. Joining me to discuss that and all things Spurs is Mr. Paul Muir. How are you doing, Paul?
Hello, mate. How are you? It's been a while. It's been a minute, as they say, down south here. So do you want to tell everybody where you've been?
Fuck it, where haven't I been? So, since I've been on the pod, I've been to Mexico, obviously across, I went to Sao Paulo in Brazil, went to Ireland and the UK and then back. So, yeah, it's been a long time. I've forgotten how to do this, pressing the wrong buttons and everything.
It's good to have you back, mate. It's really nice to talk to you.
Oh, you too, mate. You too. So, we've got football back finally. I don't know, are you a fan of the international break? Because I didn't watch any. I watched a bit of the highlights of one of the games. Did you watch any of the football during the break?
Do you know what I did? I watched quite a bit of it. I watched the Wales game because Mr. Johnson, Mr. Rodon, and Mr. Davis from Tottenham were playing. I watched a little bit of the England game as well to see what Gareth was up to. But yeah, I don't mind the international break. I'm always a little bit worried that somebody's going to come back with like a strain or like, you know, a bad knock or something. But to answer your question, I did watch a little bit of football. I didn't watch any of the South American games or anything like that. I watched, unfortunately, the home internationals.
Well, one of which was against Brazil. So you did watch one of the South American.
Yeah, I did. That wasn't really a competitive game, was it? So yeah, you didn't really try, did you, Brazil? You still outplayed us and played around us, but yeah, that's the way it was.
Well, what do you make of Wiendrick? I love his hair. He's got this James Brown thing going on with his hair. He's a throwback. I do like little Wiendrick. He's going to be a star.
Do you think so? Yeah, it was a lucky goal though, wasn't it? Because it rebounded to him and stuff. And I thought it was initially offside and stuff. But he's another one off the. Where is he from? Palmeiras or
Palmeiras?
Yeah. It's another one off the production line there. I don't know where obviously football's a religion out there, as you know. He looks like he's going to Real Madrid. Is it next season?
Yeah, and, yeah. He's signed, I think this year.
This season, excuse me. And yeah, he's going to be a superstar. So Neymar's moved aside, and now obviously this lad's coming in. So good for you, Brazil. Good for you.
Also notable absentee was bloody old Gabriel Magalhães, who I suddenly made it back for the game today, surprisingly, Saka and Ben White and all the others that can't be asked with international. But we won't go into that. Let's get on to Spurs.
Yeah.
We beat Luton 2-1. Great result. And we'll start as we always do, looking at the lineup and the wider picture of the lineup. And I guess the key thing was the strength. Like, we got pretty much everyone's back now. I thought, like, Bar Solomon. That's a full squad.
And Mickey Van Der Ven. Yeah, well, Mickey Van Der Ven didn't start, but I thought with Mickey coming back and missing, he stayed in the UK for his rehab. I thought he might have come back in straight away, but obviously Ange thought Dragusin as a right footer on the left hand side would be a better bet at this point in time. But the lineup itself, we're going to come on to a couple of things in a minute, but the defence at the minute picks itself, and then I think that's a good starting midfield of three of Saba, Zouma and Maddison. I think, you know, with hindsight, looking before yesterday's game, we're going to talk about Bissouma, but we think that's a pretty balanced midfield. Kulusevski, again, we're going to come on to in a bit, and then Werner and Son. I think I think Werner is slowly becoming like he's slowly kind of working himself into the team, and I thought he was very, very good yesterday. Kulu in a bit of a run of bad form. I think Kulu obviously getting hooked yesterday at half time. We'll talk about that in a minute as well. And then obviously Son up front, because I understand you might know a bit more, but Richie is still coming, working his way back from injury.
Yeah, I think was it an ankle knock that he had? Yeah. But he did come on towards the end. I think the last sort of 10 minutes to get a good run out, which was good to see. But of the you're saying about the midfield, like Bissouma, we'll sort of blend the talk of Bissouma in with the first goal, because I thought that he could have done a lot better with the challenge on Townsend. It was a bit of a half-assed challenge. And right at the start of the game, you do want to sort of make a foothold in the game. You do want to sort of let him know that you're there. Yeah. He's just not been on it, Bissouma. Can you think of any reasons why that might be?
Well, he obviously went to that. I mean, he wasn't playing that well before he went to have a couple of nations. In fact, since he got sent off against Luton at Kenilworth Road, he's kind of dipped, and then he had the four suspensions for a bit, and then he got suspended, and then he went on a official break, and he caught malaria. Now, obviously, you know, malaria is a little bit in Africa, like you and I getting a cold, or somebody in the UK or somebody in Brazil getting a cold. You build up immunity to it, but there are, you can get kind of like inflammation, long term inflammation, and oxidative stress. So things like lung and the pathways between the lung and the throat, the brachial tubes, these kind of things, you can get a little bit kind of like a little bit of carryover from that. It's like it's almost like you hear like people having like long COVID and they struggle. I mean, we're talking about like an elite athlete here. He's got like, you know, he's got good sports science and doctors around him. So maybe we're kind of clutching at straws here a little bit. I'm not too sure, but certainly, you know, this is not the Bissouma that we saw for the first 8 or 10 games. This is, and what you were saying about, he just waved his leg at Andros, and Andros kind of, you know, Andros is now 30 something, you know, he shouldn't be running East Bissouma that way. And then Eve doesn't really, he kind of dawdles across, doesn't he? And he kind of waves his foot, as I said, sorry, waves his leg, and then basically the ball gets cut across, and then Dragusin stands off, and then it gets shifted, and they've got an overload on the left-hand side. I don't really understand how they got an overload. I think Sars let his man go, and it's a good finish by Chung, I've got to admit. You know, it's between defender's legs, and it's in a corner, and unfortunately, Vicario can't get to that. But as we always talk about, certainly when we talk about goals, it could have been stopped at source by East Bissouma being on his game and being a bit more aggressive and a bit more in Andros's face. Maybe, you know, barging off the ball or putting out for a throw or taking a foul there early in the game. You know, worst possible start. I mean, we've lost the lead now in the last 6 or 7, 8 games. I can't remember what the stat was. It came up yesterday, but we start so slow, Bren, at the minute. And I think it's just not an isolated incident now. It's happened a few times. I don't know what you think. Have you got any ideas?
I just think we might be a bit too nice. I know it sounds very sort of basic to say. I just think we're a bit too nice sometimes. So look at our squad. So you've got like Madison sort of high-fiving the kids on the sideline. We've got the new AIA thing. The emblem was changed for a charity. All really good stuff, you know. But we kind of need to keep focus on the game as well. I do find that we are too nice. Our only shithouser is Romero, and he's too much. And we're sort of telling him to scale it back. So it's kind of, where in that pitch is that someone just sort of like to give a players a kick every now and again, and like the type of players that other teams hate to play against. For me, it seems like a trip to the new White Hart Lane or Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, it's not as daunting a proposition for opposition teams. They can smell blood. The crowd goes quiet, and I just find that everything's just a bit too nice. Like, look at our squad, like Sonny smiling all the time. And Brendan Johnson, I know he didn't start, but you know when you go to the beach and you get someone to sort of draw you as you would look like in The Simpsons? He already looks like his own Simpsons character. He's sort of so smiley and happy. And I don't know, do you think there's any truth in that?
If I was being paid £165,000 a week to play football and train at Hotspur Way and then come and, like, you know, play in front of 62,000 people, I think I'd be smiling all the time. I kind of get what you're saying. I do get what you're saying, but I think that there is a conversation to be had for sometimes the atmosphere. We do get knocked out of our stride as a fan base quite easily, and then we get our own players' backs rather than the opposition. Thought the atmosphere wasn't too bad yesterday. The first half, it wasn't great for various reasons, and there was a bit of booing, unfortunately. But obviously we turned around in the second half. But on the wider context of coming to play at Spurs, I think you might have a little bit of a point now. I'm not entirely convinced, but what you want is someone to put a reducer into someone in the first 5-10 minutes. I mean, you pay me 60 grand a week, I'll come and like smash someone and get sent straight off, you know. I don't mind. I've got enough fitness for a good 25 minutes of Premiership football, and then I'll go and take out their like star little player, just go and cut him in two. Be fine. I'll do it.
I don't know. It might be my half Irishness, sort of bring it the Roy Keane in me coming out. You know, but I don't know. I just think it's an enjoyable trip to the stadium. You know, it is. It's multi-purpose, beautiful, shiny stadium. All these songs and everything, and the trumpets, and I don't know. I might just be, like I said, very Roy Keane-y of me. But then, like you said, after that goal. Luton was playing a surprisingly high line, I thought. We did get chances in that first half. The team of Werner did everything right except shooting with his chance. And he did it so well, and then just the shot. Anyway, and the Sonny one, where that was throwback. We'll talk about this before we recorded. Throwback to the Darren Anderton goal, which you nailed it. It was against Sweden in 1995, where it hit both posts and went in. It was a gorgeous goal. And you kind of like... with that one as well, you're like, is this going to be our day?
I've got to admit, chatting to Celio, sits next to me, obviously, and Chris and a couple of people that sit around, I had a feeling, kind of like nice spring day. As you say, little Luton come to a nice stadium for a big day out. We've seen this play out. I wasn't convinced yesterday that we were going to win. I wasn't. I thought this has got like the hallmarks of like something, or another banana skin and another Spurs fuck up. When they... when you see Son hit both posts, you see Werner being put through, does everything right, turns the fullback inside out, and then basically fluffs the last minute, and you see we get into good positions but we're overplaying. It's just like, is it going to be one of them days? You can't help but think that. I wish I didn't think that. I wish there wasn't a fault line in my thinking about Spurs like that, but there is. And There were times just when you're thinking, yeah, the football gods, not today. It's not gonna be our day.
Yeah, with the goal line tech one as well. Oh, in the second half. It's just like, Jesus. We'll get onto the second half in a bit. First of all, so like I said, we had a couple of chances. Yeah. Half time comes along, Ange makes the big call. He brings off Decky for Brennan Johnson, which ultimately changed the game. In hindsight, the right move. Yeah?
It was the right move. Yeah, I was watching it yesterday, and obviously, as you know, Spurs play, we push Porro and a dog into midfield. I was looking at the game yesterday. I was thinking, it's really, really congested in there. It's really, really busy. And they went man for man with us as well. They followed, that Madison was being followed around all the time. Saar was being marked as well. Chong was looking after Werner, etc., etc. They didn't come to like play a low block like a lot of teams come to Spurs. So I was looking at that, and I suddenly realised that Decky was coming in off the wing, and it was really, really congested. And I think Ange said after the game as well, I think maybe one of our patrons talks about it, Nick or someone else, or Jack Hoyle said that... that one of the reasons why that Ange said that he changed it is because like Cooley wasn't staying on the wing. He wasn't staying as wide as we wanted him to stay. And I thought, yeah, that's right. So now what's happening is never as important as why it's happening. So why is Cooley coming hunting for the ball? And I think it's because, he's probably feeling he's under a bit of pressure. He's not playing well. And he plays better as a 10, as an 8, an attacker. That's why... probably he's the backup to Madison, as we saw when Madison was out, and he played quite well as the attacking midfielder, as the guy like off the striker, etc. He plays quite well, but that I just thought Kulu just, as Ange said, didn't hold the width and just made the whole of the middle of the park just really, really busy. There's like 9 players in there, especially when we push our players in. What that does do when Luton play a high line, it allows people like Porro and Udogie to break forward, and they did. And they made some really good runs between the centre-backs and the full-back, but they were never picked out. Maddison especially would turn the other way from Poro making a run, or he would try and slip it the other way when, obviously, Udogie was a pass. It was just really congested and really, really busy. And you got to give Luton a little bit of credit. As I say, they didn't come and like try and stink the place out. Yeah, it was a little bit of time wasting. The goalie went down a few times, but they went for man, and they were playing like high up the pitch, as you said.
I think it's also with Deki, like, does he fit Angel? Because he never goes around his man. He never goes on the outside. Right. He's always looking to cut in, obviously, because he's left-footed on the right wing.
Yeah.
I think maybe also we have to sort of consider as well, he's got a lot of football in his legs this season as well. I mean, we haven't had Europe, I guess, but he's been filling in for so many players during the suspensions, in the national tournaments, during the injuries. So he might be just a bit burnt out. But that's why he spent, what was it, nearly 60 million on Johnson, 50 million odds on Wee Brennan.
And you said he changed the game. I mean, you know, he comes on. He played really well against Poland for Wales, as we talked about a minute ago. I watched a bit of international football, and he played just off the side of Kiefer Moore, the guy who plays that. He plays at Bournemouth now, I think, I can't remember. But he was, like, pretty narrow in the Wales formation, and he had overlapping runs from Nico Williams. And he was really, really good, Brennan, the other night, and he was really involved in everything they did. Unfortunately, they kept him on that side in the second half. They didn't put him on the other side, and he got subbed, but he wasn't as effective. But he was coming into that game yesterday with confidence because of a really good performance for his country. And it helps that he doesn't have to chop back onto his left. He's on the right. He's on his right foot. As we see, it's like with most players. I don't know how you feel about this. It's like, if you don't give him enough time, he does things on instinct. It's always a lot better. It's when you give players time, they kind of like think, oh, what should I do? What's the best thing here? But Johnson yesterday was like one touch out of his feet, even first time, bang, across the goal, 6-yard box, cut back to the penalty spot, far post, kind of like nice curling balls, as we saw. He was actually, as someone who got on his case a little bit earlier in the season, I think he definitely now he's due a start. I think it's time now to put Kulu on the bench, unless Maddison gets a knock or whatever. But it's time for Kulu to like sit on the bench. And I think Brennan's like earned a start on the right. I think he was very good yesterday. I mean, he linked really well with Saar. He linked very well with Poro as well. And he's got a very good understanding with Poro, actually, on his inside. He got little 1-2s around the back of their fullback, and bang, he's in. He knows when to run. He knows when to release it. He's earned a start. That's what I'm trying to get at. He's definitely earned a start against West Ham.
Yeah, I think you summed it up there, like the speed in which he makes his plays. Like Deki holds onto the ball a bit too much sometimes. Yeah. When you want him to sort of play the pass early, he'll just take another touch and bring it on and carry the ball forward a bit more when the pass would have been the sort of more dangerous option for us. He's, but like I said,
he's always going to bring it inside Kulu. Very, very rare. He can use his right foot, and sometimes he does go on the outside of a fullback, and he does get to a buy and then play it on his right. But probably 95% of the time, 9.5 times out of 10, he's going to cut inside, and he's going to take one or two touches and bring it in towards the D or the 18-yard box, and then it gets really congested. Yes, somebody can go on his outside. Someone can, like, if a player knows he's going to do that, if one of our players, he can try and like make play a 1-2 with him, or play a quick kind of overlapping run and cut it back or whatever. But Kulu does slow things down at the minute. I don't know if he's trying to overcompensate because he's in a bad run of form or whatever, but there were times yesterday when a quick release ball from Kulu would have set us away in a really good one-on-ones, but he didn't do it. And that's where Johnson will go, and he will go on the outside of someone and use his speed over 10 metres and then like just whip it in. He's a better offensive weapon for Ange Ball at the moment, Brennan Johnson, than Dejan Kulusevski.
You also pointed out, you put in the WhatsApp group, that he has more goal contributions for any sub in the league this season. It's only 6, but that's still like, that's a decent return. And it shows that maybe this tactic might be right. Maybe it is sort of best bring him on second half when defenders are a bit slower. Because we saw with the goal, like was it a give and go with Poro or down that side?
I think it was a give and go with Poro, yeah. Just basically Poro pulls up in a half space in front of Doherty, the fullback, and then just gives him a give and go, and he's round behind him, and bang, straight into the back post. He has a, I'd say as well, he has a little look up as well, Johnson. He knows that, he knows where the players are in the box. Obviously, it's something they're going to work on in training week in, week out for, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes, just drill that move. But yeah, it was a give and go with Porro and around the back of their fullback, and then it goes. That cross wouldn't have been made that quickly if Dejan Kulusevski was on the field. Probably Porro wouldn't offer himself, because he'd let Kulu go and try and, like, use his skill to try and beat someone rather than go and support him. He doesn't want to go into that space and bring a defender with him and then clog that space. He wants Kulu to, like, go and do his work. But he knows that Johnson's not going to do that, so he's going to come and help Johnson. 1-2, bang, cross, assist. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Well, does he get the assist with the own goal? Because I think we almost got two. Because it was Kabore, I might have been butchering the pronunciation of his name, but Kabore, who I thought otherwise was excellent yesterday, with the own goal. And literally sort of within a few minutes of the own goal, we tried the exact same thing and he was smarter this way and cleared it away. But I think wasn't Werner's goal against, was it Palace? Was it very similar as well? Where we sort of cut it across across the goal and he tapped it in far post. Was it against Palace?
We've done it a couple of times. I think Destiny did it at Brentford and a few times at theirs. And I can't remember if it was Wolves. I can't remember. But that's a kind of Ange ball goal. Quick 1-2 and a really good rifle ball across the 6-yard or penalty spot area for someone to come in and tap in. Or if a Richie or a Son doesn't score, then someone's coming at the back post, like a Timo Werner, to put it in. It seems a very kind of, like, worthwhile tactic when it works. But sometimes when you have a Kulusevski off form, it doesn't work because, you know, he hasn't got the pace to do that. So we have to work other ways to make those openings.
Then we had the goal line technology incident, which, like, watching it from TV, it looked, because you could sort of see it touch the net, you know, like inside the goal. It was very similar to, was it Sheffield United or something, where a team went down against Villa, I think, when the goal line technology, like, just failed, broke, and the goal was in. It was really similar to that in that it was in right in the sort of corner. It wasn't like in the middle of the goal, right in the sort of side of the goal. Right. What was it like in the stadium? I mean, obviously, maybe you're too far to have seen it, but
where that was, the sun was right in my eyes, and I was shading my eyes and things. And they don't show you the graphic. They don't show that. They just you're all looking at the ref to look at his wrist and point to his wrist and say, like, he's had the bleep from the goal line technology. But you got to admit, when you look at the freeze frames, you look at the video and stuff, Doherty is right behind the line and his feet seem to be on the line and he's the one that clears it off the post, and you think that's got to be in. But, and I've seen a lot of conspiracy theories from the usual suspects. Same, yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, they didn't show it for like 3 or 4 minutes. So they had some kind of Photoshop whiz kid kind of, like, you know, making it look like it wasn't a goal, and it's a big conspiracy against Spurs and all this. But no, it's just, you know, it's pretty, you know, Hawkeye technology is Hawkeye technology, the goal line technology. So it was in the stadium, it was just like, oh, it's another spurned opportunity. That's what people around me would think, oh, fuck, we've missed another one. So but it was close, no? It was really close.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the sort of XG timeline, getting into the XG. So we had an X.
Have we turned into extra inch? Sorry.
We had an XG of 3.26 goals today, 0.46. And there was a big jump, like, in the timeline around sort of the 79th minute. That was that chance. But then we got the goal. I was sort of, when that happened, I was going to, like we were saying earlier, it's Tottenham, it's not our day.
Yeah.
But we kept going. I guess that is a good thing about Ange, that we do keep on going. We do not stop. And we eventually got the goal that we deserved. It was a good break from corner. Werner did very well bringing the ball forwards. Smart little interchange with John. Did Johnson know Sonny was there? I'm sure he did, because it was quite a quick sort of, like, tap over to him. So, and Sonny did his thing.
So it's actually Sonny picks it up at the edge of our box and he breaks. And and then obviously, like, Johnson's come in. And I think Johnson's trying to control that. I'm not entirely sure he knows that Son's there. And I think he gets a deflection as well, and it goes the other side of the goalie. But that goalie was being a dickhead all game. He was going down, etc. And I've got no sympathy for him, but Son in those kind of areas, you know, again, instinctive. It comes back off of Johnson quite sharply. Yeah, I'm watching it now. He just sticks his foot out. He's trying to control it, Bren. And he's just lucky it diverts. But, you know, you've got to be in it to win it, haven't you? Johnson's in the six-yard box. He's occupying two central defenders. And Son's making, like, the third man run. Like, you know, like, just holding back off the play. Good movement, you could say. And he gets his just rewards. But it was a lovely break. You know, like, Werner done very, very well. Werner's decision-making yesterday, apart from when he fluffed his goal opportunities, was very, very good. You know, he didn't give up. On the second half, he was on my side. He was right in front of us. And, you know, he kept his width, you know, and he was, yeah, he was good. He was very direct. He offered on the outside as well as the inside as well, a bit like Son does when he's on the line, when he's out there on the wide touchline. So, Werner, 15 million. Yeah, I've said this before. I think we should get him. And I think, you know, the goals... Yeah, and I think they will come. I think we'll get two or three more for the end of the season. But he was very good yesterday. Yeah, he was very direct, extremely fit, conditioned. You know, like 60-70 meters, like getting back, doing his defensive shift as well, getting up in support when a doggy's going on an underlapping run as well, knows when to release it for him as well. Yeah, he was very, very good yesterday, Werner. Very good.
Yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's the irony of that goal is that Johnson gets the assist for miscontrolling it, and he doesn't get the assist for the own goal, which was a far better bit of skill. You know? But anyway, that's the but yeah, well, with Werner, though, would you then say, I mean, 50 million doesn't sound like a lot. It's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, but if it means that we don't, it takes funds away from another buy, like if we're in for, is it Nico Williams, the Spanish guy that's at, oh, Jesus, Seville, is it? No, it's not Seville.
You're not talking about the Welsh guy, Nico Williams, are you?
Not the Welsh guy. No. Is there another Nico? There's two Nico Williams, isn't there?
Yeah, there's one who plays in Spain. I'm now showing my complete lack of like European football here, but I know you're talking about.
But my point is that can that 15 million be lumped together with another 30 to buy a 45 million player that will deliver the goals as well as all the other stuff that Werner does? I don't know. It doesn't sound like a big investment, but. You know what I mean? Like, if we are being smart with our purchases, is he a smart purchase?
I think so. I think so. I think it was Jack Hoyle said it on our YouTube or on a pod actually when he was on that we could try and maybe get him on a kind of loan again next season and then with the option to buy him at the end of his contract. I'm not too sure. I just think he fits Ange Ball like pretty well. I think he, as I say, I think he's got a good understanding with the players around him. I think he doesn't mind doing the dirty kind of defensive work as well. Stuff that was being thrown at Johnson at the beginning of the season, mainly by people like me, that he doesn't come back, he doesn't track back. But now, like, Werner's doing that. I would take him. I think it's a bit too early to see who we're going to purchase and stuff and funds available. But for 15 million, I think it's for the depth he gives. We don't know what's going on with Solomon and his meniscus at the moment. I think I would exercise the option to buy him, to be honest. And I think he cannot be any worse than what we've had out there at points in time over the last two, three seasons. So, yeah, let's get him. Go and get him.
Yeah, fair enough. Just being devil's advocate a bit. So looking at the wider picture, obviously a much, much needed 3 points in the race for top four. Uh-huh. We were fourth for about an hour before Villa beat Wolves.
And what an hour that was, eh?
The heady heights.
Yeah.
But we're still in it. Like we still got game in hand over Villa, which is the Chelsea game away, we've got a great track record at. But I think that, how are you feeling going into this? We're getting players back. I was surprised Van de Ven didn't get a run out. Yes, at least sort of 15 minutes, something like that, just to get some some game time before the West Ham game on Tuesday.
They showed him in. He got a big cheer when he's coming out, and they showed him a little bit on the screens, on the bench and stuff as well. I think you've got to integrate people like Dragoos in. We'll get European football next season. It's quite clear. Whatever that is, we're going to be playing twice a week and sometimes more. You've got to integrate this guy. I thought he did okay. You stay Dragoos in. He's not Mickey van de Ven. What we do miss with Mickey van de Ven, and Dragoos in tried to do this yesterday. We miss his ball carrying. Everybody knows about his pace, recovery pace, and let's say, and being so calm. But we do in build up, we do create quite a lot from Mickey van de Ven, just like bringing the ball into midfield. Dragoosen did it a few times yesterday, but then what he did, he carried on his run, and he got in Werner's space, and he kind of clogged that area up a little bit. There's a couple of times when he runs past Townsend with the ball, and it's like, that's pretty quick. And you're thinking, please don't lose it there, because they're going to spring on us if you lose it. But he didn't, and he shot down the line, and he carried on like an underlapping run. But what you get with Mickey van de Ven is that you get the pace, but you also get the time to release it into like a kind of midfielder or a forward player. But he doesn't continue that run. What he does, he knows like when to kind of like stay out of the way and let someone kind of like do their skill or do their business. Dragoosen doesn't really do that, and that's what we miss with Mickey being out. We miss a lot in build up. I feel Dragoosen looks all right. He played a couple of left footed passes yesterday, which were kind of like scuffs. It's not his fault that he's a right-footed player playing in the left centre back at the moment, but I will be surprised if we don't see Mickey start against West Ham. I think it's a big game. We need to stay in the hunt now. Unless they're scared about rushing him back. I'm not sure, but yeah, I would see Mickey van de Ven starting again on Tuesday.
Well, I think I said this in the WhatsApp group. If he's fit, play him. Like, I don't know. And if he's not, if there is a risk that he'll pull up, then he's been taking him back too soon. So I don't know. I think we have to trust the medical team.
You're the physio. You're the head of sports science at Spurs. And you have a scan. You take me for a scan and MRI. Paul, how's your leg feeling? It's feeling great. I've been training really, really well. You can see my stats, my analytics, my GPS. I'm doing what I've got to be doing. I could be telling you a load of nonsense, but I could be in real pain. But how do you know that? You just see like what you have to believe what I'm telling you. You have to believe what the scans say. So I think sometimes with sports science staff and doctor staff, they kind of like they part of it's holding a player back. It's almost kind of like, you know, it's not that you don't believe them. It's like, of course he wants to get back in the team. Of course, he's been one of the signings in the Premier League this season. Of course he wants to come back. But if I was a medical staff, I'd be saying to my agent, just another game. Just give him another game off, and he'll be ready for you. Sometimes it's almost as if you're like, you're on a horse and you know, it's like you're on a thoroughbred, but you're just holding the reins back a bit. You're almost kind of trying to save it from itself. And I think, When I hear people say, if he's fit, play him, I just think sometimes, you know, the odd game where you put a Dragoosen in just to save a Mickey van de Ven from himself, I think that's useful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, no, I get that. And it was Luton. So they other than their goal, they didn't really put us under much pressure. No. So it probably is a good game for Dragoosen to sort of get more minutes. I just found it like with the game against West Ham. And players always sort of play with little niggles. I think you said it as well, that the player's never at 100%. No. Like fucking Bentancur's been playing with a broken little toe, which I love Danger's response to that. So it's his little toe, mate. Calm down. Like he's got nine other toes. Like, yes, mate.
Somebody's not told about the nerves that for balance. It's very, very important that the inside of your ear and your little toe are in balance, because it's very important for like your proprioception and your balance when you're playing football. But anyway, we digress from that. Broken toe. I mean, I was quite surprised when I heard that during the week, but typical Ange response.
Yeah, typical. So we got West Ham coming up on Tuesday. We're gonna be reviewing that actually straight after the game. Me, you, Seb, and Rachel from the Trust. It'd be great to get Rachel back on. How are you feeling ahead of that? I watched most of their game yesterday against Newcastle, which was, I saw it when they were winning 3-1. I was like, oh, that's it. And then Newcastle came back and smashed them. But
yeah,
they've got dangerous players. Kudus looks quality. Oh, how they got Kudus, I don't know.
Yeah, that was the game that was on before our game on the TV. So yeah, we were in the bar and we were kind of like channel ourselves and trying to watch it. And what can you say about Moyes? He's definitely got them playing very, very well. I like Jared Bowen. I think he's superb. I think you're right. I think, you know, he's a real threat. He was a threat when they played us at ours over Christmas, I think it was, or New Year, or just before then. Am I confident? No, not going there. We know what it means. I can't stand West Ham. I think I despise them, to be honest. On a day, we know we can beat many, many teams, but it's West Ham, it's theirs. People talk about being their cup final, etc., but we know it's a London derby. Couple of days after this one as well, yeah, recovery, but we don't, you know, as you say, we're pretty much back to full fitness apart from Solomon. Richie's finding his feet back in, looked pretty good for the 10-15 minutes came on. Am I feeling confident? As I said, no, but I wasn't feeling confident about yesterday either, was I? And look what happened. So we can't afford to start there like we've been starting. As we said earlier, I'd be happy with a scrappy 1-0. Have that, you East End mugs.
Oh, God, yeah. Franco lives Stratford, doesn't he? So he's
he lives like literally, I think a stone's throw from the stadium. And so he's away though, isn't he, at the minute? Because that's why we're...
He's in Cairo.
He's in Egypt.
Eating egg and chips.
Eating egg and chips in Cairo.
Just on other Spurs talking points, yep. There was the protest yesterday about the senior concessions on the 65th minute. So if you were at the game and you did join part of that protest, well done. We fully support your protest against these concession changes. Did you see much from where you were?
There's a few people in the north stand. Where I sit quite low, east lower. I'm by the halfway line, and the sun, as you can probably see, was right on my... This is not an excuse for me like trying to dodge a question. We were attacking on the 64th and 65th minute. We were playing quite well, so I didn't actually look around, to be honest. What I would say is that coming up from Seven Sisters, there was a lot of leafleting about, you know, the concessionary issue, and it's good that there seems to be quite a bit of mobilisation from the fan base about this, which is really good to see, because it has been thrown at us in the past that we're a fan base that doesn't really kind of like get behind much, but I think there is a real groundswell of unpopular opinion about this, and I count myself upon that as well. But I only in the north stand yesterday did I see some people turn their backs. I didn't see anything in the south stand, but then the sun was in my eyes.
we haven't spoken yet about the Richarlison interview, his second interview with ESPN, which obviously got a huge amount of attention. It was very refreshing to see someone talk so openly about mental health struggles, and it is something. I think it is the number one killer of men,
yep,
in the UK is suicide. So it's something that when he was so open about it, when he talked that he'd had those thoughts, the things like that, which lots of people go through, was just really refreshing. And because certainly in Brazil, like I said in the Patreon chat, mm-hmm, that it is quite a sort of macho patriarchal society out here, and yeah, very much like you saw with Bolsonaro sort of being the president, and this sort of groundswell of support he had sort of being very old school and traditional roles for men and women and stuff. And so for him to sort of come out with Richarlison, I think he's not from one of the bigger cities. I think he is from a sort of smaller, more rural part of Brazil, which again would be sort of very sort of cowboy, very, you don't talk about your feelings. If you do, you get mocked. So for him to come out was refreshing, and Brent, and we fully support him.
Can I ask a quick question? Is he the pressure that he must be under in a World Cup? Could you just talk about, you know, are there like murals of him on the wall and stuff like this in cities and things like, I mean, obviously he's the number nine. He scored the lovely kind of bicycle kick. I mean, we spoke about it. I mean, I wasn't the greatest fan. We were going to buy him, and you were saying, look at the goal he just scored. We've had many, you and I especially, about this. What can you just give us a little bit of background about like the pressure not only the team, but someone like, you know, like Richarlison as Brazil's number nine is under? To just can you give us a little flavour of that?
Well, yeah, well, Brazil's used to winning it. So there's always the groundswell of expectations. 220 million people here. Football is definitely the only sport that really that has sort of nationwide interest. So, yeah, I mean, every World Cup, the country goes into it. Everyone wears the Brazil shirts and with an expectation to at least challenge. And so, yeah, certainly the pressure on a young striker to the when you look at the players that have been in his position in the past, so you like Ronaldo Fenomeno, which you call Fat Ronaldo now. you've got obviously Bebeto, Romario, Pele, all these icons through the years. So that the weight of that shirt must have been enormous. And to go out like Brazil did against Croatia when Croatia just had one shot on target and it was a deflection, it went in and they go out on pens. It was a real sort of gut wrencher for the country, because there was an expectation, like Tite was a good manager, so there was an expectation that Brazil would get past Croatia, but it didn't happen. And certainly, yeah, I mean, he also had sort of personal issues. I think there was people close to him that were living in his house that were diverting funds from him as well. Like he was being scammed because he's a young kid with a lot of money and is a bit, maybe a bit sort of innocent and naive as well. So, yeah, I mean, you could see it. And he's always been that sort of player, the sort of emotive player. He saw when he scored the goals against Everton, he almost cried. Yeah. He was, I'm so sorry, like that. So he's, I think it's his personality as well. But when you, so like you said, when you bring in the pressures that being Brazil's number nine have, on top of obviously the injuries and these personal issues, it's bound to take its toll. So for him to come out and talk so openly and positively about therapy and talking to someone, I've been through therapy, I'm not sure if you have, it's good for you. If your brain is like any muscle in your body, if there's an issue there, it needs to be treated. So it should be treated like that, mental health, and it's so great for him to do that. And I'm hoping that it does have an impact out here with young people to notice that and work on it if they need sort of help.
I think it's definitely see change now. Like I think as you say there and very eloquently said about that, you know, you hope that it kind of like it helps young men in Brazil. I think also you could draw parallels with the Daily interview with Gary Neville. I think a lot they're still talked about with people that I train with, you know, guys that I train with, and friends of mine, not only Spurs fans, but, you know, like guys that have no interest in football, but are aware of what Dele went through. And he spoke about in his younger life in Milton Keynes, and, you know, we know about his upbringing and things like this. And, you know, when you see these guys of Dele or Richarlison talking about it and the pressures that come with it, and it just makes it a little bit more kind of like, you know, well, actually, it's good to talk. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It's nothing to be kind of like, you know, oh, I'm not a real man, or I don't feel half. It's not in my family's nature to show these emotions, etc., etc. I think there's a beginning of a change now. It doesn't make us any less of any male or less a man. It's just, I think when you see these high profile guys talk about, you know, the weight of expectation and public opinion and how it can affect them, and especially with the advent of social media and like everybody's got like an insight into your life and everybody can contact you almost instantly and those things, it can only be positive. It can only be positive. And I mean, I read the Athletic interview, sorry, the Athletic piece on Charleston, and I watched the interview, and he's really refreshing, really open, honest, difficult watch at times, but also really refreshing, like to see him talk about that expectation from 220 million Brazilians and to go out that way. Just, yeah, it's good. If you get a chance to, if you're listening to this, get a chance to just look it up on YouTube or something, yeah, or ESPN America. It's well worth your time.
Well, I think it was within a week of Brazil going out, or within a couple of weeks, that there were riots in the capital with the Bolsonaro supporters going crazy. So I'm not saying that they're connected, like Brazil going up, but had Brazil not gone out, had Brazil progressed and won the World Cup, it would have unified the country massively. So there was obviously that happening afterwards as well, which was big. I mean, Brasilia was a war zone for a full day, so it was big. And on this subject as well, a friend of the pod, Mickey Hazard, obviously ex-Spurs player, legend, the nicest guy, His nephew took his own life, and he has started a campaign, Benches for Legends, I believe it's called, where he's has park benches in parks across the country that they are putting plaques on for people to. And the thing is very simple: sit down and talk, and that's what the bench project is there to do. And obviously, Mickey will be able to explain it far better than I can. But we will get Mickey on very shortly to discuss that project as well. Great. So let's call it a day there. Paul, thanks for joining, mate.
Always. Nice to talk to you again as ever. And we'll talk again on Tuesday night, won't we? But yeah, thanks for having me on.
Oh, it was a pleasure. And do watch out for the YouTube guys, which will put out a show tomorrow with Gibbo and John, I believe, and others will be on that. So for YouTube, to think, get over there. We will actually be doing the post West Ham instant match reaction with yourself and Seb and Rachel from the Trust, so, which we'll also publish as a pod as well. So look out for that when it comes out. It's thick and fast after a couple of weeks off. Sick of the sound of us. As ever, keep the faith and come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.
Sports Social Podcast Network.